Welcome to Interchain FM, where we dive into the frontier of the blockchain space. We're now in the third generation of blockchain tech, where a burgeoning multi-chain ecosystem is about to explode into what we call the decentralized web. Where Ethereum is to the mainframe computing era of the internet, Cosmos is to the PC era. If you're seeking alpha in the Cosmos ecosystem, look no further. This is the destination for your exponential learning experience. Interchain FM is where you can get the download on all of the high signal projects building bridges to one another and how you can participate in the future of the internet. I have Charlie here. Are you the lead developer of Interchain accounts?
No. So basically, my role on the IBC team at Interchain is that I was the product lead of IBC for the last year and a half. But I have since transitioned to the engineering team. So I would say I'm one of the engineers in the IBC Go core team.
Okay. And how many people are currently working on it, and who else is working on it?
Yeah, so on our team, we have three people on the product side, and on the engineering side, there are six of us.
What's the latest on Interchain account?
It's actually a really good question for now. Obviously, Interchain accounts has been live for a few releases now. It was released in IBC Go V3, and we're now on IBC Go V5 with V6 coming out in alpha and beta. But I think one really interesting thing about Interchain accounts right now is previously the design was, looking back, a little bit clunky. So basically the flow would look like, so Interchain accounts basically, yeah, just to back up for a high level explanation is this idea that, you have chains which are right now connected to each other through IBC. Typically the use cases right now have been token passing. So this is over ICS20, IBC token transfers. Interchain accounts kind of opens up a whole new avenue of use cases based on generalized message execution across chain. So how that works is rather than having your token kind of being the asset that you're passing around, you can imagine that the Interchain accounts packet is like a list of directions. And this list of directions is being generated on what we call the controller chain. So let's say if it's like Hub and Osmo. Hub is a controller chain. What they want to do is send a token over to Osmo and then have that go into a DEX and maybe, let's say, put it into liquidity pool, put it in, swap the token, etc. If you have a use case with Hub being controller chain and Osmo being the host chain, you could imagine a setup where, you know, prior to Interchain accounts, like let's say the use case is the Hub, someone on the Hub wants to send their Atom over to Osmo and put it in a liquidity pool or maybe swap it. What would happen in IBC before Interchain accounts is that you'd have to IBC token transfer your asset from the Hub to Osmosis, and then you would basically have to handhold that token. You'd have to go to Osmo and then you yourself kind of make the swap or put the token into a liquidity pool. With Interchain accounts, we can enable a flow that looks like the Hub will open an Interchain account on Osmo. And this user can submit one transaction, and this transaction would basically trigger the IBC token transfer. And when the token is successfully transferred, trigger an action like a message swap or a kind of deposit into liquidity pool. So kind of on the high level, we can see that Interchain accounts is opening up a whole new level of very complex use cases, kind of chained transactions, and use cases that are very important for the kind of growing cross-chain ecosystem, while at the same time abstracting all of this away from the user who now only has to submit one transaction, you know, from one UI to do all of these things.
If I'm making an action on the Hub chain, how is it going to speak to an account on the controlled chain and make it do something?
So the way that the Hub would open an Interchain account on Osmo, or the Hub would enable a user to basically submit a message swap on the Hub that would be executed on Osmosis, would be that the Hub first has to open this Interchain account on Osmo.
Okay, and so it's effectively your account, but you're controlling it by proxy of the Hub.
So I guess like maybe one thing to clarify is that Interchain accounts are a little bit different from user accounts. And so when we say Interchain accounts, what we're really talking about is chain to chain accounts. So like the Hub would open a channel And this channel would basically be responsible for passing all transactions from the hub over to Osmosis to be executed. And so if I'm a user and I want to submit like an individual kind of message swap over the hub's interchain account channel to Osmosis, like the I don't have to open my own interchain account on Osmosis. I basically use this kind of like hub to Osmo channel. But what I do have to do is indicate in my transaction, this is, you know, the amount of token I want to transfer, and this is kind of the message. Like I the hub would basically do this for me, kind of. But the hub could expose, let's say, something that says, you know, transfer swap. This could be one button that says transfer and swap on Osmosis. I, as a user, would click that button. This is going to submit one transaction, which for me, it you know, it's just one transaction. Underneath the hood, it's a multi-message transaction, which contains one IBC token transfer and one interchain account packet. And that interchain account packet contains a list of directions that says, okay, swap this on Osmo. Mm-hmm. And so the first step that happens is the hub will submit these tokens over to Osmo. And then whenever that token transfer has been successfully registered, then the hub will be able to send kind of my message swap over to Osmo on the interchain accounts channel. And that will be executed on the Osmo side. And then in the end, like when this is successful, I'll get this, you know, success act back. And then as a user, I can see, okay, I should have like these amount of tokens in my account in Osmo in the denom that I want them.
What sorts of applications does this open up?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the use case that I mentioned just now where you have a token triggered action is a very powerful one, because I think we see this is actually the use case that's happening the most in IBC right now, right? Like someone sends a token over to somewhere and they want that token to trigger an action. Mm-hmm. And so as a user, it's pretty clunky right now to have to effectively handhold my token, you know, and go from UI to UI and kind of do these things myself. But if I'm thinking from the perspective, I mean, not only of a user, but also of a chain, it's like, as a user, I kind of want to be able to just click that button and say, transfer my tokens. Like, no one ever just transfers their tokens to do nothing, right? They want to do something with that. So I think, like, as a user, I want to have this, like, one-click action to do those things. And as a chain, I want to be able to offer to my users this user experience of saying, this is the service I provide to you, which is, you know, bringing your tokens over to whatever other app chain and taking advantages of the service that app chain provides.
Mm-hmm. From a technical perspective, what's the difference between ICA and OTC, other than that there's control in a cross-chain manner?
Yeah, I mean, I think OTC is a lot to do with if you're talking about making transactions within a single chain. So OTC is going to allow you to basically, yeah, like have access control on those types of transactions. But I think the main difference is that with interchain accounts, you really have a cross-chain workflow. And I guess like the way that I like to think about it is right now, each chain is kind of like having to almost like re-implement, or either it implements all the services it wants on its own chain, or it kind of like makes its users have to manually do workflows that in Web2 would be accomplished by pinging like service endpoints, right? Like in Web2, there are a lot of services that expose API endpoints, and you kind of like ping these endpoints. Let's say like I want to query something, or I want to like do, you know, some send some like make a transaction of some kind through these endpoints. But in the cross-chain workflow, we're up until interchain accounts, we were not really able to really like expose these endpoints in a way that would be effectively usable by other chains. And so interchain accounts kind of allows you to think about app chains really as apps in a kind of platform, which is the interchain, rather than having all of these apps having to exist on platforms, which are, you know, these app chains themselves. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like where you are going with the types of applications that could be made possible in this broader interchain context. So now you can have composability across different dApps, basically, except
yeah,
they're not smart contracts like in the Ethereum sense, but they're app chains in and of themselves.
Yeah.
So how do you contend this with, let's say, somebody who comes in and says, okay, well, you can't have data availability if it's if you're doing something cross-chain. You have to basically trust that the validator set of that other chain that you want to open up ICA with completely, or else.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. It's really hard to get around the problem that you more or less have to trust your business partner, right? So like IBC is not really in the position to kind of tell someone this is a good business partner or this is a bad business partner. But what we can offer you is a security guarantee that that you will always know the actual state of your business partner. As in, if your business partner's validator set has gone Byzantine, there's not really that much that IBC can do to save you. And it's kind of like if you've chosen to do business with a chain that's gone Byzantine, that's like a bad business decision, right? But I think what IBC can offer you with interchain accounts is, in the case of good business relationships, let's say, you know, now all of these exchanges are opening own app chains. I think this is a really powerful venue for these exchanges, which have a very clear service and a kind of very clear value proposition to perform their service as an exchange, rather than having to, you know, on-ramp or off-ramp through a specific chain, through any one specific chain. They can basically spin up their own Cosmos chain, and then any chain can kind of use the services of that exchange. And through IBC, have a kind of sovereign, like, on-ramp into the order books of these different exchanges. So I think that's like, I think your original question was, yeah, about like the security guarantee. And I think like what we can offer is really basically this secure guarantee that your transactions in the kind of order that you want them to be carried out will be carried out. But we can't save you from choosing a bad business partner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And are there any other considerations to be made when it comes to the ICA security model?
I think with regards to ICA, obviously it's built on top of IBC transport. So the transport layer is what secures, that's the layer that provides you kind of this native light client security guarantee. What we mean by that is basically like, you can imagine like light client guarantees as opposed to bridging guarantees. As a bridging guarantee is basically if I'm sending you a message, you have to trust that the person carrying that message is going to be like not opening your letter or doing anything bad with it. With a light client guarantee, it's almost like I don't have to send you a message. You can imagine like we have a set of photos and maybe a set of mirrors, but the photos that we have, like I have a photo of you and you have a photo of me. Every time I make a transaction, like I add 20 tokens into my bank module, you'll see that reflected in your photo of me, and the same likewise. So it's kind of like this photo is something that I have, but I can look at it to confirm that that's kind of like the state of you. And so to send a message, rather than having someone confirm like, okay, this is the other person's state and this is what they want to do to update that state, like this person has 20 tokens and they want to add 40 more tokens, you have all of this information yourself in this kind of photo. So I think like that being, okay, so that's IBC Transport's kind of security guarantee. Interchain accounts is built on top of that. So basically we can kind of assume that security guarantee is going to be there for interchain accounts. And that's why we think it's such a powerful feature, because you know that your counterparty, like you basically know the state of your counterparty, and then you know, and the next step is basically giving them directions to alter that state. Like you know that your counterparty now has these 20 tokens that you've transferred. Now they can, you know that they can also, you know, put them into an LP or swap them for something else.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this podcast to tell you about Interchain FM Stake. Interchain FM is not only a podcast, but also a steakhouse. IFM Stake is a premium sushi-grade steakhouse running on Osmosis, Umi, and Comdex. If you get your alpha from this podcast, show us some love by delegating to Interchain FM Stake. With interchain accounts, does that reduce the overhead for chains to basically IBC connect with Osmosis, for example? So if they're just launching and they don't necessarily want to, I don't know, build in the IBC connection, is it a lower lift for them to just say, okay, I enable interchain accounts and then I could bootstrap the liquidity of a pool on Osmosis, and that's easier for my engineering team to do?
I think integrating IBC Go module into a chain is not very difficult. I know because I've done this myself. It's pretty straightforward. I think the technical challenges are really are really kind of the same as actually finding a validator set. So it's like finding the relayers to basically provide the relaying infrastructure for you. The good news is that a lot of validators do relay now because it's a really good value proposition for them to get delegations. And it's really important for them because they are kind of providing the fuel for the interchain ecosystem. And so I guess like that's really like, I don't think interchain accounts changes that. But I think what it does is make it easier for chains to explore novel new ways that they can expand their use cases.
You don't need relayers, right?
You do. So you do need relayers. So relayers are kind of the ones that are going to be listening to the channels and making sure that packets are ferried back and forth. But one important thing to know that relayers are not trusted. So they have no way of actually changing the packet information. They are just literally carrying it back and forth.
What tangible differences does it make for the engineering team to use interchain accounts? Like, does it save them any development time?
Yeah. So I think one thing that it saves a lot of development time is that if you have these complex workflow, if you have like the, you know, even the use case I talked about earlier, being executed through an interchain account, it saves engineering team basically the trouble of having to implement an entire IBC module that on the other side, like, and have this accepted on both sides that basically does the, I guess like one way to think about it is interchain accounts doesn't care what message is being passed in. As far as it's concerned, it's just a transaction that should be executed on the other side. But if you wanted to do this without interchain accounts, you'd have to create an IBC module which knew what type of message was being passed across and how to handle that message when it was received on the counterparty chain. So you'd have to like kind of build an IBC module that knows, okay, this is an Osmosis message swap, and I want to send an Osmosis message swap across. And on the Osmosis side, you'd have to convince them to upgrade their chain to implement this module. And so it's like not only the engineering team, but as well, like the entire, I guess, like biz dev product team, but like getting that coordinated upgrade across the interchain.
Okay, that's a really heavy lift.
It's a really heavy lift. And I think like everyone knows that coordinated upgrades, especially for, you know, in use cases where maybe one chain is benefiting a lot more than the other chain. It's like one of those things where as a chain who's looking to, like you said, bootstrap some types of workflows with the service API endpoints that Osmosis is offering, maybe they don't have the team to kind of lobby Osmo to get a coordinated upgrade with their module in it, but they can open an interchain accounts channel to Osmo and then directly send, you know, something like a message swap.
Yeah. Over. Okay. That's excellent. That's extremely compelling. So let's say the interchain ecosystem has matured in the next 2-3 years and most chains are using interchain accounts to take certain actions. What do you think that the implications are for composability? Does that help us move in this sort of exponential composability paradigm?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's really difficult to think about really composable cross-chain workflows without something like interchain accounts because, like I said before, without interchain accounts, you either rely on the user to complete all of these cross-chain workflows themselves, or you rely on all of the chains you want to do business with to have coordinated upgrades and implement your kind of business model. And so I think that kind of dependency, those dependencies are really going to slow down the development a lot of these use cases.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we're going to have Ethereum-like cross-chain composability at that point?
I mean, I think we are already seeing the beginnings of it now, right? So, you know, like Quicksilver and Neutron, some of these chains which are launching now, which are making use of interchain accounts for these cross-chain workflows, I think we're starting to see already the first explorations of interchain accounts workflows. Obviously, you know, the feature was just released, so I think it's a little bit early to see the full development as we've seen it in the Ethereum ecosystem with the time that they've had to develop. But I do think that all of the technical infrastructure is there for the types of workflows you would see happening across smart contracts in Ethereum, but now are happening across app chains in the interchain ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. That's really when the interchain ecosystem shoots itself upwards into singularity, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I guess one really exciting thing to note here is that IBC right now has been, I mean, it's the backbone of interoperability in the Cosmos ecosystem, but we're starting to see the first, you know, like in testnet, or I guess it's Kusama to Polkadot was the most recent one, but implementations of IBC Lite clients, which are happening outside of the Cosmos ecosystem, but because they are IBC Lite clients and they operate with IBC semantics, you know, a Polkadot parachain is now, in the eyes of an interchain user, the same as a Cosmos app chain, right? Like, I can communicate with any of these parachains in the same way that I would communicate with Osmo and or FMOS, and I think that's a great development. We've also been in talks with a few teams working on ZK ETH2 Lite clients. There's a team called Composable, which is working on, they've been working on the Substrate one, but they're working on one for Near. And so I think, like, we're really starting to see what has been in Cosmos, you know, kind of a given for a long time, but the value of generalized interoperability, I think we're starting to see that becoming realized in a lot of these other ecosystems who maybe just thought about bridging as tokens getting locked up.
Mm-hmm. And that's the most naive use case.
Yeah, that's definitely, I think, even, you know, the fact that Etherscan displays bridges in a metric of TVL, that's just like a paradigm that doesn't make sense, right? Like, why would you think about bridging as locked up value? The bridge should be passing the liquidity, the bridge should be passing the messages and enabling the workflows. And I think that's what IBC is really trying to bring forward.
When you talked about interchain accounts getting enabled on certain Kusama parachains, is this all able to be done without a bridge so that we could finally abstract away all bridging basically once
other chains
and other ecosystems enable this?
So this is like a full IBC. So this is like, I can, with my relayer, submit a IBC open channel transaction to the IBC Lite client on this parachain, and I can open a channel now.
Mm-hmm. And what are the base components needed in order for this to happen? So if you're on an Avalanche chain, or if you're on Ethereum, on Solana, you know, all the Bitcoin, let's say, Handshake or whatever, let's say in a totally incompatible system, what are the key pieces of ingredients needed to make that happen without a bridge?
IBC is designed to work with proof of stake chains. So the reason for that is we need instant finality for these client updates, the kind of photo updates that I was talking about, where I update the photo that I have of you and your kind of transaction state. That we need instant finality for that.
Okay, so let's remove Bitcoin and proof of work chains from the question and only talk about the Solana, Ethereum too.
It's kind of, so I think that it really is a case-by-case basis for each one of these. Like, each chain is a special chain and presents its own special challenges. In the case of ETH2 Lite clients, it's not actually so much the Lite client that's an issue. In fact, Tendermint, Solidity, you know, the Tendermint Lite client for the Ethereum side already exists. The kind of IBC logic for the Ethereum side as well exists. The challenge with the ETH2 Lite client at the moment is really the gas costs of verifying the Tendermint, like basically on the Ethereum side, verifying the snapshot that they have of the Cosmos chain. That's really expensive because doing anything on Ethereum is really expensive, and especially updating a Lite client is very expensive. But the kind of ways that we've seen people approaching, and as I mentioned before, is there are teams which are working on zero-knowledge basically snark proofs, which, you know, there's a few approaches, recursive proofs, having like different ways of verifying these proofs that are not as gas intensive and not as expensive. And so I think that's, you know, like in the case of ETH, that's kind of like the work to be done on that side. Solana has its own special challenges as well. It has a little bit more to do with the design of the state machine and how we can actually pull transactions out to add to this photograph that we have of Solana. That's something that would require a little bit more design changes on that side, and that's kind of a reason that we haven't been approaching a native Lite client implementation for that chain as much. But I guess like one thing to say generally is in lieu of having a native like client implementation, as much as like we want to have that full security guarantee, right? But kind of the alternative right now, and really kind of the alternative that all other bridges are posing, is this kind of validator secured model. And IBC has a way to accommodate for this type of proof, which is something like what Axelar is using. It's a threshold signature proof, and you're basically relying, it's trusted in a way, you're relying on this set of validators to let you know that this transaction has happened on Avalanche or on Algorand or on Solana. Arguably, though, it's the same security guarantee that you're going to get with any bridge. And the positive is that if it's IBC enabled, you kind of get all the other IBC functionalities out of the box, right? You can like send the token transfer, you can open the channels, you can send the interchain accounts, transactions, etc. So I guess like on our team, we're kind of advocating for both approaches. The one that we would like to see is this native light client one, because it offers the best security guarantee. But in lieu of having difficult designs for some of these other chains, the solo, what we're calling them solo machines, these kind of solo IBC solo machine clients are a way to kind of, on the business side, get things rolling more quickly while still giving you the access to the larger interchain infrastructure.
Any housekeeping items, like any call to actions that you want to make?
One of the challenges we've seen presented by interchain accounts for chain developers is kind of understanding how to use the controller module. So the host module, like the host account, is the one that is accepting the directions and executes them. The controller chain or the controller module is the one that is composing the messages and sending them across. And so obviously, like, there's a lot more kind of like thought to be done on the controller side. And initially, in the first design of interchain accounts, we had an additional auth layer, kind of like an access control for this controller module, because we thought, okay, it's not just anyone who should be able to send these messages, not just any module. But with SDK 46 and launch of groups, and we're starting to see these workflows where maybe you want to have a multi-sig of people, let's say a DAO. You want this group to be able to execute a message. Let's say it's a delegation message on another chain on behalf of, you know, a larger group of people. This group of people, and we realized most kind of groups of people who would have access to this controller module are already authenticated, in the sense that, you know, not everyone's going to get in this group for free, and not everyone's going to be able to anyways have access to this type of infrastructure. So what we've done is we have kept the legacy way of having another custom auth module, but we've created a new way where you can directly kind of call into the controller keeper and compose your messages without having to create another access control layer. And I think that allows for a lot of the use cases to be out of the door a lot more quickly, because you don't have to worry about rolling your own access control. But yeah, that's been a kind of development we've seen with the launch of 046 SDK and the group's kind of multi-sig DAO use cases that are coming out of there. And yeah, I think for users on the interchain account side, there are going to be more and more chains rolling out interchain accounts transactions. I would like to think that the average user is actually not going to experience a huge change, and likely will hopefully experience a great change in terms of less clicking, you know, less transactions that they have to send, because the chain is doing a lot more work for you under the hood. So I think that's the way that we're seeing that go forward.
So with the more granular approach with having a multi-sig control and interchain account, you know, would that interplay with DAO's existing system, where people can just launch a DAO contract on there, or let's say do something with Wind or whatever, Ethan Frey's project, and use interchain accounts to transfer their funds across different chains?
Yeah. So let's say there's a DAO on Juno who wants to, you know, delegate a certain amount of money that they have on Osmo to like validators or to like projects that they find compelling in that ecosystem, because, you know, in the like Sunny talked about yesterday, mesh security, in this kind of mesh security world, you have chains who really care about each other's ecosystems and each other's communities a lot, and maybe even have overlapping communities. And I think with interchain accounts, it is a very you know, real use case that you will have DAOs wanting to interact with other chains that they are very much a part of. And you would have a, you would be able to, through interchain accounts, have this DAO execute these messages directly on these counterparty chains that they have connections with, without having to do all of the manual work themselves.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Charlie. This has been extremely informative. Happy to have had you on this podcast.
Thanks for having me here.
Thanks for tuning in to Interchain FM. As always, I will read through the pages of white papers and condense only the alpha for you in a 1 hour long digest. Be sure to subscribe to Chango and Chain's YouTube channel to be up to date about the latest technology and never miss a live streamed episode.